If he was a Brown Reckless, he would
have been Zelman Bellsnyder.
Good evening.
Good evening.
Well, as usual, I always have good news, and tonight I have good news. Remember, during the month of August, we are going to explore the different technologies that we can use so that we can bring into our lives or manifest in our lives or demonstrate in our lives what we actually want. And we're going to do that by using emotion, feeling, and thought. And those are the three technologies that we use in order to pray to this thing that we call God. The thing that we call God is intelligent. And we must pray to God intelligently so that we get what we want in life. And we use these three technologies of feeling, emotion, and thought. We form a trinity. And with that trinity, using that language, using that technology, we can tap in to this thing that we call God. You've often heard me say that we live, move, and have our being in the mind of God, which is absolutely true. And since we're living, moving, and having our being in that mind, we have to be able to use that mind. That mind is the only mind there is. When we think, God thinks. So, by using this particular type of technology, we are able to tap in to God itself. And they have seen, and many people, Native Americans in fact, used this type of prayer, used this type of technology. Then in the 4th century, it was taken away from us when they started to do edicts on the Bible and edited everything. So we're not going to blame those people for doing that. They thought they were doing it correctly. But now we're finding out, after almost 2,000 years, or over 2,000 years, that the prayer that we're using sometimes works and sometimes doesn't work. If we know that there is such a thing as God, and we believe in such a thing as God, then we have to be able to use God all the time, and we have to be able to get what we want. That is what God is for. God is here to give, not to take. So, when our prayers are not answered, it's simply because we are not using the right technology. So we're going to learn to use the technology so that we can combine those three things and ask for what we want and receive what we want. So, in review, what we always start out with is the idea that everything starts inside of us. It's what we are that causes the outside of life. It's our thinking, and it's our thinking about ourselves. So, before we start to make any type of prayer whatsoever, we have to learn to accept ourselves. We have to learn to love ourselves. We have to learn to know that we are worthy, deserving, totally lovable, and that we matter. And we stay in that frame of mind, and we stay in the emotion of love. Love for ourselves and love for everybody else. Because the underlying emotion is always going to be love or fear, and you must make that choice. So if you're operating from fear, you'll get what you want, but you won't like it. And if you operate from love, you'll get what you want, and you will like it. So it's all in changing the way we view ourselves and the way we view the world around us. And to learn that we can stay in this feeling of love all the time. And that's love, of course, always for ourselves. I have a little statement here that was from the Dead Sea Scrolls. It is from the Essenes, of course. And it says, "First shall the Son of Man seek peace within his own body, for his body is as a mountain pond, that reflects the sun when it is still and clear. You see, we're always reflecting something, and we're reflecting what's going on the inside of us. And if our emotions and our feelings and our thoughts are calm, cool, and collected all the time, then we're reflecting that into the world. And it goes on to say, if it is full of mud and stones, it reflects nothing. It reflects nothing. And that's what we're doing. We're just reflecting our thoughts, our emotions, and our feelings. And we're reflecting them out into the world. And they come back to us. So, with your own self, think of yourself as that mountain pond. How clear is your thinking? Are you always loving yourself, loving everybody else? Are you grateful for everything? Are you living in thanksgiving, you see? Then you can start to pray. Then you can do something about it. But until then, you can't. Now, along with the idea that we always have to love ourselves, we have to see ourselves as wonderful, we have to see ourselves as worthy, deserving, totally lovable, and that we matter, we also have to realize as soon as we do anything, make a treatment, we have to know that it is already done. Because everything is already done in the mind of God. Everything is there. It's already done. So we start with that premise that what you're asking for is already there for you to receive. And then you go on from there. We also pray. We pray peace. We don't pray for anything. We pray for peace. We pray money. We pray abundance, prosperity. We pray health. We don't pray for something. When you start out saying that you're praying for something, you are saying you don't have it. You have to know that you already have it. So you pray the item that you want. You pray the peace, you pray the money, you pray the rain, if you want rain. You pray rain, you don't pray for rain. You're praying for rain, you're saying, there is no rain. You see? So it's just a little technical thing, just to tweak your whole thing. You've heard me say many times, words structure thought. So it's the words we use. And this thing we call God feels these different things. So you get that back. You get back your feeling. You're always going to get back what you're feeling. Last week, I think I said, you've heard many times, change your mind, change your life. That's absolutely wonderful. But you also have to change your feeling. You have to change your feeling. Just because you changed your mind doesn't mean that your feelings changed. Even though we say, feeling follows thought. So you have to think of yourself as wonderful all the time. Then you have to say, how does that feel in my body? What does that actually mean? Not just in your head, oh, I'm a wonderful human being. What does it mean to be a wonderful human being? And you let that come down through you, you see. You have to let that come down through you. Now, the other thing that we're always thinking about is this mystery. How does this work? Well, no one knows exactly how it works, but you work it anyway, and it works for you. Does anyone here have that much technical knowledge that they know exactly how a computer works? Absolutely not, but we use it anyway, don't we? And even though we don't have all that knowledge, don't we get what we want if we press the right button? We get what we want, but we don't know how. That's all. Maybe a real technical person can do that. But you don't have to know how it works. You just have to know that it works. And it always is going to work. So here's a wonderful example. When we eat something, we eat, say, a carrot. Now, we ingest that carrot, we assimilate that carrot, and we eliminate. But we don't eliminate a carrot. that carrot is transformed into something, isn't it? It's transformed into something. So, if you have digestion, assimilation, and elimination, isn't that a trinity also? And don't you just take that for granted, that you eat a carrot, you're going to grow a fingernail or a hair, something's going to, it's going to transform into something, isn't it? Now, there's no one alive who knows how that's done. There's not one scientist, one doctor, no one knows why you can eat a carrot and become your big toe. No one knows how that's done. But you do it and you see it all the time. So now you have to say, that's exactly the way prayer works. We don't know exactly how prayer works. We do know how the prayer works, and we know that we use our emotions and our feelings and our thought. It's going to produce something else. It's going to transform into something else. You see? So that's how you have, when you're praying for something, you have to realize, well, I'm using this technology, therefore it has to. It has to transform itself into what I want. Just those three items, you see. And using them, it'll transform into what you want. So when you're thinking of those things, think about your eating. And say, well, I eat this, but I don't know what my body does or how my body is able to figure out to make this something else. But it does. It makes it something else. So when you pray, you're praying with the three different technologies. But what are those? You know, what is the feeling and emotion and the thought? We know, we say, oh, well, I'm thinking and I'm feeling and I have an emotion here. But then that goes someplace and it comes back as something else, doesn't it? It comes back as the manifested thing that you want. So, always start with the idea that it's already done. And all, then you go from there, you have to make your whole body, every cell and every fiber in your body, believe that you are worthy, deserving, totally lovable, and that you matter. So with that, let's do the magic.
Oh. He matters too.
I matter, I matter, I really, really matter. I matter, I matter, I really, really matter.
Yeah.
You need to go outside.
What is it?
Just put it around a big one.
Oh.
You need to go outside. Time to go outside.
So now we know, last week we talked about emotion, and we now know that there are only ever two emotions. The one is love, and the opposite of whatever you think love is what it's going to be. Most people, it's love and it's fear. But whatever the opposite of that is, and you're always going to have one of those emotions going on. And you're the one that's choosing that, which emotion you're going to have. So, try always to choose love. It works much better for you than fear or any of the other things that are going on in there. And that is a choice to do. To always stay in an emotion of love is a choice. And you have to make that choice moment by moment. Because we live in the outside world and we see all this stuff going on and we can get very frightened. We can get very upset, and love goes right out the window. So, what do we know about that? Don't judge by appearances. Just don't judge by appearances. So keep that going. The other thing I talked about last week was the whole idea is you have to have a willingness now to give up all the old ideas that you had, that you were taught as children, or at a church or were at an organization of some sort, you have to say, there's a different way of thinking now, and I am willing to start thinking differently. Because what happens is this. You cannot put new wine into old wine sacks. And that's what most people are trying to do. Most people come to these metaphysical teachings and they want to apply it on top of what they already know. And it will not work. It will not work. It does not apply. You cannot put it on top, because any belief that you have, an old belief, will always take precedence over a new belief. You have to get rid of the old belief so that the new one then takes over. So how do you do that? You have a willingness to do that. You have a mind and an intelligence that now can think and say, oh, that makes absolute sense to me. That's absolutely reasonable for me. I have all this information. I now realize that the information that I was given was not complete, that there were things missing in the information. And we're not going to blame those organizations or the churches or anybody for that. We're going to say, oh, now I know better. I realize that these things were edited out. But now I can find all that information and I can learn to think differently. You see, the whole idea in life is to learn to think differently. Years ago, I read a book by Joseph Murphy, and he said, you must remember, there's a completely different way to go through life than most people do. And I loved that idea, and I held that idea till I realized what he meant. Because you look out in the world and everyone is going down the same path. Everyone is reacting exactly alike or very similar. And they say, well, that's the way humans do it. That's the way it's done. No, it does not have to be done that way. You can make a choice and say, that's not working for me. That doesn't work for me. Before religious science, my life was not working. I could not figure life out at all. I thought there has to be something different. That none of this stuff makes sense. And that none of it makes sense. I remember I used to go to church with my friend Doug the Baptist. And, of course, the Baptist church. And the minister would give these talks, which made absolutely no sense whatsoever. But that wasn't the problem. The problem was no one was listening anyway. No. Doug would sit beside me and do his checkbook the whole time. The woman in front of us would read something else.
He didn't know what you
were talking the whole time. Mm-hmm. I looked around the church, not one person was paying attention to the minister. Not one person. So I went there a year, maybe a year and a half, before they asked me to leave. And one sermon was wonderful. And the minister's name was Al Kraft, I remember. Right out of everything. Church, I said to him, that was absolutely wonderful. That was the best talk you've ever given that I've heard you give. I said, why don't you do more there? He said to me, the congregation would not allow me to do that. The congregation would not allow me to do that. If you think I'm wrong, I'll tell you how churches work. Because you're employed by that congregation, and they do not want to hear something that goes against what they are thinking and what their beliefs are. And if you go against them and try to tell them, no, you have to do it this way, this is the way, which would make more sense. No, they stop you dead in your tracks. They stop you dead in your tracks because they want to hear what they want to hear, and they want it to be perpetuated and perpetuated. Has anyone here read well, I don't know what the title is. I know what the thing is. It's in the Valley of the Blind, the one-eyed man will be king. Mm-hmm. And doesn't that make absolute sense? Yes. Because that man can see and the rest can't? Mm-hmm. No. There's more of them than there are of you. So what happened to the one-eyed man?
They blinded.
Ooh.
They're just like him.
Yes. They blinded. So he's just like them. And that's what society does. That's what the world outside, my hair starting to stand up. That's what the world outside does. It wants everyone to be blind to what's going on. Everyone be blind. So that you fall into a psychic sleep. And that's why so many times, and so many masters have said, you must wake up. You must wake up. But you have to do that yourself. No one else can wake you. You know, we can prod you, we can kick you, but you're the one who has to wake up. And you have to be able to see that. And you have to be able to see that there's a different way to go through life. A different way to go through life. Now, let's look at this intelligently. If we do believe in this thing, God, then why can't we get what we want? You're saying. And if this thing called God really worked the way that all the churches say that it does, then why do we still have stress, struggle, and strain in the world? Why do we have conflicts and wars in the world? Why do we have people who don't like themselves? You see. The biggest problem in this world and why we're in the trouble that we're in is because people do not like themselves. People do not like themselves, so they project outside to somebody else so that they will look better. So that they will look better. If you feel insecure within yourself, you're going to find somebody that is even less, so that you can point that out, thinking that you're rising yourself up. And this is no way to go through life. And you'll see that, or at least I saw that. Let's make it personal here. I saw that in the different brand name churches that I went to. They were not interested in learning more about God. They were not interested in loving themselves. They were interested in pointing out the faults of everybody else so that they would never have to look at themselves. They would never have to look at themselves. So, absolutely believe this, that you must learn to love yourself. Up one side and down the other. You must learn to love everything about yourself. And you must learn to forgive yourself for anything that you think you have done that could keep you from loving yourself. Because this thing that we call God totally loves you, regardless of what you do. Regardless of what you do. But you have to love yourself enough to know that. You see, when you love yourself, you're not going to do that crazy stuff. You're not going to do that stuff. But it starts with you. Always it's going to start with you. And how you're feeling about yourself. How are you feeling about yourself? And sit quietly and figure that out. And give up all that other nonsense that people say, well, I'm afraid of failure, I'm afraid of success. Well, what's the difference? If you're not getting what you want, who cares if it's because you're afraid of failure or you're afraid of success? You have to always start out with the premise you're already successful. You have to start out with that premise. I'm already successful. And why are you already successful? Because you're an individualized expression of God. And God always succeeds. Therefore, I always succeed. And then you keep building that. You have to build that within your own consciousness, with that mind chatter that's going on. You have to be able to. Let me ask a question. Since you've been coming to these classes, have you noticed your mind chatter slowing down? Are you able to slow it down? Are you able to correct it? You are.
All the time.
All the time?
Constantly.
Good. You have to be able to hear that.
I mean, I'm constantly just correcting myself while I'm listening to you.
Yes. That's why your mind goes the same thing.
Yes.
Yes. And that's the way it is. Here's what I have come to the conclusion. Now that I am at this age in life, I have to be my own parent. And I have to correct myself. But I do it gently. And I do it with love. So when a thought comes into my mind that I know perfectly well is not right, I forgive myself and get rid of that thought and bring up a thought that I wish to think. We have to police our own thinking. We have to raise our own selves now. You see, we've left our mind just go wild like a child without any discipline whatsoever. And now we have to start to discipline our mind, discipline our thinking. And we start to do that by learning to become a witness to our own thinking so that we can actually put it out there on the screen and see what we're thinking and realize we are not our thinking and we are not our mind. We are much more than that. And we have to become the witness to our own thinking. That's that whole idea of becoming detached. And you get detached from the world. Now, are things going to upset you? Absolutely things are going to upset you. But you're going to get over it faster. Mm-hmm. You're going to get over it faster. You're going to be able to correct it. They asked a famous guru one time, Master, you never seem to be upset. How can that be? You always seem to be in peace. He said, oh, I get upset. I just correct it quicker than you do. See, you can instantly correct it. But when we don't correct it, we go into that funk, we go into that whole thing, and we let that build in our lives. And so we say, whoops, I'm going to correct that. I'm just going to correct it. An example. This morning at 11 o'clock, I arrived at the bike shop to pick up my bike, which to me I'm promised to. And I said, is it ready? And he said, oh my goodness, I completely forgot that. I said, but you promised to have it at 11. He said, oh, but I got busy doing this, I got busy doing that. Blah, blah, blah. Now, I watched my mind, and I thought, well, I could shred this man. I could pick up this bike and say, I'm taking it to someplace else. You promised, you're no good, you're this, that, and the other thing. And I said, you know, Dallas, that's God talking. You can't yell at this man, you can't do anything. I said, you know, I'm passing back through here this evening. Do you think it would be ready by then? He said, I'll have it for you. So on the way here, I stopped and picked up the bike. Now, after I left the shop, my mind still wanted to say, why would he do that? Why would this all get me to an extra trip? I said, shut up, mind. Shut up. You see, we let our minds upset us all the time. We let our minds do that. Nothing on the outside of life is affecting us. We're doing it with this constant thinking. So, the thing always is to instantly forgive yourself. And instantly forgive that man. Was it all that important? I said, that's not all that important, Dallas. That bike isn't your life. Why are you going to get all upset and stressed out and all that? And I didn't do it. And now I have the bike in it. But I could have gone into a time race with this man. This is the things that you have to do. The outside world automatically goes into that time race. They would have yelled and screamed at that man and said, you promised him, what kind of a shop is this and this, that, and the other thing. Now they wouldn't have dropped that when they came home at night time, that the first conversation at the table would go, you know how that man treated me today? And blah, 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 blah. And then that goes on, and then that reminds the wife something that happened to her, and then she complains about something, and then the other one, and it's just a great big thing going on all the time. And all of that is unnecessary. All of it is unnecessary. And that's one of the things that we have to learn. In fact, in September, I'm doing a talk on just unnecessary things. We do so many things that are unnecessary. And you know, in this teaching, what we teach is illness is unnecessary. You don't have to be ill. You can choose to be ill. You can follow the outside world and be ill. But it's not necessary. You see, that's a completely different way to go through life when you realize, oh, I don't have to do this. But everyone does the same thing. Just like sheep going over, they just fall down off the cliff. And we, and you can't do that. You have to think for yourself. So, in August, with this whole idea, make up your mind that you're going to be able to use this technology to pray to this thing or talk to this thing that we call God. And remember, I always try to call it a thing or an it or something, because we don't know what God is. We only know bits and pieces, but it doesn't matter. It's like digesting a carrot. We have no idea how that happens and why that turns into a fingernail or whatever else it turns into. But we accept that, don't we? So why can't we accept that we don't know exactly what God is, but we do know that we can use this thing called God the same way as we can use a computer, and we can get what we want. But first we have to put the right stuff in. What's the slogan in the computer?
Garbage in, garbage out.
Yes. Garbage in, garbage out. So, it's the idea of reflecting. If your pond is muddy and filled with rocks, there's no reflection going on there. So, you clear out that. You clear out. And you make your thinking peaceful. You make your body peaceful. You make your feelings peaceful. Your emotion of love. And then, and then you do your prayer work. Then you do your prayer work. But until then, you're not going to. But the underlying emotion is love. Love for yourself. And the underlying feeling is always that I'm worthy, deserving, totally lovable, and that I matter. Because if you pray for anything, and you can, your mind tells you that you're not worthy, you're not going to get what you want. You're not going to get what you want. They have to be in an aligned with each other. That's all that is about that. That's how that works. So we learn that emotion is the engine that's driving everything. That's the engine that's driving things. And we make that emotion love. Love for ourselves. Love for everybody else. Love for this wonderful universe we live in. Love for this experience that we are having. Love for this experience that we're having. How many people here love their life?
Yes.
You have to love your life and say, my, isn't this a wonderful experience? Isn't this great that I have this opportunity? That I am alive. That I am alive. And here again, we take life for granted. But no one knows. No one knows how life happens. Now I keep saying they're going to do it in test tubes. They're going to do that and that. They don't start life in a test tube. They call it maybe a test tube baby. It comes in something else. What I am saying here is, there is not one person on this planet, I don't care how intelligent they are, no one knows why the heart starts to beat. No one knows in a fetus why the heart starts to beat. And it starts to beat with inside itself. It just starts to beat. Why does it start to beat? You see? They don't know why it starts to beat. So, we have to assume that there's an intelligence somewhere doing this. And an intelligent plan is going on. Not predestination, but a plan that's going on. And a wonderful gift that we're given is life itself. That our heart started to beat with inside itself. Now, what does that remind you? All life is an inside job. All life is an inside job. The heart starts with inside itself. It didn't have a stimuli from outside itself. So your life then is always an inside job. What is going on inside of you is what's going to be going on the outside of you. And you're going to do that outside work by correcting your thoughts and your feelings and your emotions so that you can get those in entrainment with each other. So that you can get those in entrainment, okay? Let's look at this handout. Did you get one there? Feelings? Yes. Feeling may exist only in the presence of thought and emotion, for it represents the union of the two. So, thought and emotion represent the union of the two. Here, give that to her.
Thank you.
So we have to know that. We have to know this thing about feeling. And what do we usually know about feelings? That we learn how to stuff them at a very early age. That we learn how to not feel. And now we have to start to feel. And we have to realize that our feelings are powerful things. And that those feelings are going somewhere and doing something. They're always going somewhere and doing something. And if you stuff your feelings, they are going into your cellular structure and doing something. So you have to learn, how do you feel? When I was a child, they would say to me, how do you feel? I would tell them how I felt, and they would say, no, you don't. This is how I gave up that because I thought, why even bother? Because I'm always wrong. So, I didn't rely on my feelings anymore. I thought, I must not know my feelings. They know my feelings. I don't know my feelings. Now, we have to come back and know our feelings. We have to know our feelings. What am I feeling? Now, what is the main thing you think when I say you must know your feelings? What does that mean? You must know your feelings. You must know how you're feeling about yourself.
Oh.
Not about somebody else, you see. And that's not where we get in trouble. When we think feelings, when we think, how about love? Well, everyone wants love. Everyone wants love. But where are they looking for love? Outside. Always outside themselves. Instead of, oh, I want the feeling of love. I want to feel what love feels like. So I have to learn to feel inside of myself. I have to love myself and not go outside of myself and try to love somebody else and get that love. And that's what people do constantly. And that's what the world teaches you. You know, you're nobody until somebody loves you. You're nobody.
They even wrote a song about
it.
Yes. Can you come a few bars, please?
Nobody until somebody loves you. You see? So everyone's out there trying to find love, and they don't find love, so they think, oh, well, I'm unlovable. You have to know that you're absolutely lovable, and you have to start to fall in love with yourself. And that's that inside job again. Then once you do that, then you can love somebody. Then you can love somebody. So, get those feelings, but always bring it back to you, you see? Always bring it back to you, so that you know that you're worthy and deserving, totally lovable, and that you matter. And that you matter. I bet I was close to 40, if not 40, when it dawned on me that I didn't feel that I mattered. And I lived 40 years without realizing that. So my friend Betty, who you've often heard me talk about, said to me, well, Dallas, don't you know you matter? I was knocked over. No one ever asked me that. No one ever said that to me. And then it started to dawn on me what that actually meant. At the time, I was working at a furniture store called The Storehouse, and I wrote it on the cash register. I matter. So that every time I went to the cash register, I would see that, that I mattered. It changed my life. Once I realized I mattered. And because I mattered to myself. It doesn't mean that you have to matter to anybody else, you see. But at the time, I didn't think I mattered to anybody else either, you see. So it wouldn't have mattered what anyone would have said to me. But that one thing from my friend Betty, who said, Dallas, don't you know that you matter? And it was in a conversation, it was an opinion that I was giving. And I thought, well, no one cares about it. She said, Dallas, don't you know that you matter and what you're thinking matters? Why, no. Because it was always, no, you don't think that. No, you don't feel that. That's not. So I just took it for granted. Oh, it must not matter. But once I figured that out, that I mattered, changed my whole life. Changed my whole life. So please, people, do that. And Reba's not here tonight, and I'm sure she won't mind because she tells the story also. You know, I was downstairs from here when her mother made her transition. I was holding her mother's hand when her mother made her transition. And the thing there is that just before her mother died, her mother said to Reba, you know, I never felt I mattered. I never felt I mattered. A horrible way to go through life. Now, I think she finally was able to bring herself to the realization that she did matter. But she was in metaphysics also. But so many people go to their grave never knowing that they matter. Recently, a friend of mine died, made his transition, and he was in his 80s. He was 80 years old. He was very intelligent. Did crossword puzzles. Did all the things. Wonderful mind for history and details. But he never thought he was intelligent. He never thought he was intelligent. You see, you have to know that you're intelligent also. You have to know that you're mad, that you matter, that you're intelligent. We're all intelligent. We may not all be scholars. We may not all be intellectuals. But we have to be intelligent because we live and move and have our being in the mind of God. You see? Don't do that and go to the grave with that song still inside of you or feeling that you really, life really wasn't worth it, or this whole journey wasn't wonderful. Make this whole journey wonderful for yourself. And you can do it by realizing that you're wonderful, that you're a wonderful human being, and that you are connected to this thing that we call God, and that you have the tools and the technology to talk and to pray to this thing, God, so that you can reflect back what you're feeling on the inside. Because we never see with our eyes, remember. We see with our mind. So we have to change that. And we have to change our feeling and our emotion. And when we do that, the outside world changes. The outside world changes. So, keep your emotion of love going all the time. But love for yourself. And that is what I hear all the time. I was with a young man Wednesday at dinner. And he's waiting. He said, what can I do? I know that everything is going to turn out all right for me. And this money's coming in and all this. He said, I'm getting myself ready to receive. Well, he said, what should I do? I said, well, first of all, know that's already done and that you are receiving now. You're not waiting to receive anything. You have to know, I'm receiving now. You're saying. And then he put on, he said, because, he said, you know, when I get this money and I make all this money, I'm going to really help people and I'm going to do this, that, and the other thing. And I said, oh, bullshit. I said, don't do that to yourself. I said, you see what you're doing? You're bargaining with your mind and you're bargaining with God. And you're saying, if you give me this, I'm going to do this, that, and the other thing. Now, he said, but I really mean it. I said, you may really mean it. And you may do it. But I'm telling you that it is not necessary to do that. That's a little trick of the mind. That I went on to explain to him that goodness has nothing to do with it. Everyone thinks that goodness has something to do with it. It does not have a damn thing to do with it. What has to do is how you're feeling about yourself. How you're feeling about yourself. But the mind has many little tricks and many little loopholes, and one of it, and I think that it's always sanctimonious when people say, but I'm going to give it away. I'm going to really help people. I'm going to help charity. I'm going to do this, that, and the other thing. Okay, all well and good. But don't use that as a bargaining tool. Don't use that. No, I am worthy, deserving, totally lovable, and I matter. And I want it. And I want it now. And then when I get it, I will decide if I want to give it away or if I don't want to give it away. You see? And you're usually give things away. Because the more you give, the more you get. But don't use it as a bargaining tool. Don't let your mind do that little trick to you. Do you see what I'm saying, everyone, or hear what I'm saying? And you know your mind does those little things, you know? All the time your mind wants to, well, we'll play this little game. We'll do this with God. We'll do this with the universe. No. Be straightforward. Be straightforward with this thing. You don't bargain with the universe. You don't bargain with God. You sit down and you say, this is exactly what I want. And I want it because I know, first of all, that it's done, that I'm connected to this thing called God, and I have changed my thinking, my feelings, and my emotions. And I know that I'm worthy, deserving, totally lovable, and that I matter. And that's the end of it. Now you don't have to go do an Avena, light 19,000 candles, and all that kind of stuff. You don't have to do that. Now, I'm not taking anything away from lighting candles and so forth. If that gives you focus, if that keeps your mind on that, then that is fine. But the power is not in the candle, and it's not in the Navina, and it's not in your work. The power is in your feelings. In your thoughts and in your emotions is where the power lies. So, we have to think, what am I feeling at every moment? What am I feeling? And how am I feeling about myself? Do I know at all times that I am prosperous and abundant? Do I realize at all times that money is freely circulating in my life and that I always have a divine surplus? And just last week I was doing that affirmation. And it just changed all of a sudden. And it went. Huge sums of money are always circulating in my life. Huge sums of money are always circulating in my life. And I always have a divine surplus. Because money is always circulating. Now you raise the ante. You bring those things up. And the more you know about yourself, and the better you feel about yourself, the more you're able to accept all this and say, it makes absolute sense. It's absolutely reasonable to do these things. Remember the word reasonable? Your mind will not accept something that's not reasonable. If I say by tomorrow morning I want $1 million, my mind says that is not a reasonable request. It's not for me. Could be for somebody else. Like the queen. She could say, if by tomorrow morning, I want to win $1 million. And that's reasonable for her. She would get $1 million. But you have to make it reasonable. Then, once you learn, by tomorrow morning, I want $100. That can be done. My mindset. Now, you manifest that, and then what do you say? More, please. And you stretch your consciousness, and you get more, you see? That's how you do it. You have to be reasonable. Everyone wants everything big all at once. You cannot handle it, people. You cannot handle it. Until you're able to handle it, you're not going to get it. That's just the way it is. That's a wonderful thing. The reach of our prayers is mirrored in our beliefs concerning what we are capable of. You have to know that you're capable of it. You see? And you feel that I'm capable of doing this.
So my thoughts today at one point was to broaden my container, because I see that these transactions are really manifesting, and I'm believing that they're manifesting and going to go through, and that they're just a matter of time. However, I do realize in the back of my mind, wow, that's quite a bit of money for me at that moment, and it's fairly close together. And so someone says to me, the receptionist said, so what will you do when you're rich? And I said, what will you do with the money? Because you'll be rich. So then, well, I'm rich now. And however, the back of my mind, where I'm starting to correct my thinking all the time, says, what will you do with the money? And you better figure out how to broaden your container so when it comes, you're ready to receive it. Because it's coming. It's just a matter of, it's here. I just haven't got it in my hot little hands. But it's going into the bank, and you need to know what you're going to do with it. So, I don't really have the answer other than nothing. I said, nothing, I'll save it. I mean, at this point, that's all I can say. I didn't promise to give it away. I didn't
No, you don't ever promise to give it away.
Right.
Why would the universe bother to give it to you if you're going to give it away? I mean, that doesn't make sense.
Right.
If somebody would ask me, what are you going to do when you get all that money? I would say, I'm going to learn to love myself more.
Oh, that's a good answer.
I'm going to love to live, to love myself more, because now I'm going to have the financial means to do that. And I'm going to pamper myself with that. And that is what you say to me.
Mm-hmm.
You say. And that's stretching your consciousness, and that's reasonable, and it's being absolutely honest. Instead of always trying to come up and see, because people want to think that you want to hear, well, I'm going to give it away, I'm going to be charitable, I'm going to be this, that, and the other thing. Don't do that. It is not necessary.
My understanding, they don't really want to hear that. They just want to hear that you're going to be charitable.
Yes, yes.
I mean, they don't care if you give it to somebody else.
No. No.
It's not about that.
What?
Not about me.
Yes. They want their hand
down. However, my little concern is that I keep my container open or broaden it so that when I do receive it and are able to you know how they say it goes, and I thought well, the ebb and flow comes in, it comes out, it comes in, you know. Lately when something's come up, it's just like, well, the money will be there.
Yes,
the money will be there. I don't know how it's coming, but it's coming.
Right. And more money will be there than I will be able to spend. I will always have enough to spend and to share, you see. That's what you have to keep telling yourself. That's, and then you say to yourself, I am now ready, willing, and able to receive, you see. Most people never are willing to receive. You have to be ready, willing, and able to receive. And then you let it come to you. You let it come to you. So, this month, on we get the three things together, emotion and thought and feeling, you're going to be able to manifest, because it's a technology and it's been used 2,500 years ago, and it was used by the Essenes, by many other Native Americans, used it all the time.
How are you spelling a scene?
E-S-S-E-N-C-E.
A scene.
No, that's S.
That's a...
No, E-S-S-E-N-E.
E.
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 Oh, E-S-S-E-N-E.
E-N-E.
Yeah. Just, that was just a religious...
Right.
...sect of people.
Set.
That, 500 years before Christ, they were already writing and already knew this technology. And then, of course, it was taken out. It was edited out of our Bible and right out of everything.
But what happened? Did the Essenes go underground or something?
They were persecuted and killed. And they, what they did is they fled all over. They dispersed throughout the world. And they hid things throughout the world. That's why they hid all the Dead Sea Scrolls.
Right.
Because they knew that they would be destroyed. Because they eventually, people turned against them. People always turn against them. When things are really working, and when you think, people turn against them.
Well, and there's people who want to control.
Yes.
They can. It can control.
Yes. And that's the whole idea of most institutions and so forth are there because they want to control. All religions want to control. The difference between religion, all religions separate. It's just the, what happens. It causes separation. We do not teach separation here, remember. We teach unity. Spirituality always unifies. But religion always separate and keeps people separate.
How is it then that the power of society was able to diminish the Essenes' power of God?
Because there were more of them.
Okay.
It's always, look at race mind or race consciousness, whatever, there's, that's a big thought atmosphere there. And it's going to band and together. They're going to band together. They're not going to let new ideas and new ways come in because it frightens them. Why do you think in the valley of the blind, the one-eyed man will be king? It will never happen. One-eyed man, they will blind him so that he is like they are. And that is what happens in the world. But fortunately, these things have survived, and we have the information now. So we have to have a willingness to use the information and a willingness to give up our old beliefs that we learned as children and say it's all right for me to believe in a different way. I do not have to believe as my parents did. Let them have their religion. Remember the commercial, "This is not your father's Buick"? This is not your father's religion.
Father's Oldsmobile.
Yeah, it was an Oldsmobile. Yeah. Not your father's Oldsmobile. This is a new way of thinking. A new way of thinking. Of course, you know, we call it new thought, yeah. But it's been around 2,500 years or more, but we call it new thought. Yeah. So, go ahead.
Okay. My daughter, I keep getting phone calls for that are meant for her from banks and credit card companies, so she's not paying them. And you think that I'm getting them because my feeling is still in that kind of level? I mean,
why are you getting them? Is she giving your telephone number?
Yeah, because it's the home.
Well, that's why they're getting.
And so, you know, they're on the message.
Aren't you helping her out, Bill?
Well, I'm giving her money. I mean, you know, the kid needs money for gasoline. Or
how old is this child?
22.
You're not helping her at all. You're enabling her.
Okay. That's what I was being accused of. But I thought,
well, don't, it's not that no one's accusing.
I know, my husband's
you have to, yes, the best thing you can do, you see, what is the best thing we can ever do for somebody? Teach them how to fish, not give them a fish. Teach her how to stand up on her own 2 feet. Tell her all that. Love her. Love her more than you ever think you can. And love her right out of this situation. She's also taking advantage of you. And you're in a codependent relationship with your daughter. And she knows exactly how to pull every string of yours.
Right.
Okay. So you have to say, no more string pulling here, dear. You have to be the one. If you want to call that tough love, whatever you want to call it. But love her. Absolutely love her. That does not mean you buy her Gaia. She has to figure out how to do that herself. She's working, isn't she?
She did start it.
She just started.
She started.
All
right. She quit a job that she was making a lot more money. But she doesn't care about these creditors. I mean, what can I do? I'm not working. I'm going to pay them.
But she's living at your house?
Yes. She's living at home.
So the telephone number and all.
Yeah.
Well, you tell the creditors, that's my daughter. It's not me. Here's her number at work. Harasser at work.
Okay.
It's not your problem.
It's not. Make it more my problem.
Yeah. Because you're a mother. And that I understand. But now you have to do something or she'll never get out of it. So you're not helping her. And I'm not saying throw her out on the street. I'm saying love her more. Love her more so that she loves herself enough to have her own money. Because it has to be humiliating for her at 22 to ask you for money that she can't stand on her own 2 feet. You see? So you're not helping her.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome. So during the month of August, we are going to learn how to talk to this thing and how to pray to this thing that we call God. And we're going to look at it as a technology. And we're going to look at God now as a big computer in the sky that we can punch the right buttons and get what we want. And it's wonderful. And so are you, and so am I. And there ends the lesson. Thank you.